My name is Michael Coates. I'm a former firefighter, but I'm also a former soldier. And it's the stories from the individuals within this military community that I'm desperate to document. In this episode, we speak to a former Iraqi soldier who escaped the Saddam regime in 1997. We speak about his hometown of Mosul, normal life in the city, and joining the army. We also speak about imprisonment, torture, escape, and life in the UK. Episode 47, Sivan Hermes. This is Declassified. Sivan, what year were you born?
I was born in 1977, the 1st of January.
Whereabouts?
In Mosul. There is one area called Serechhana that is in the middle of Mosul, like center, basically. Yeah.
And when we think of Mosul now, we think of a war-torn city. What was it like growing up? What was it like being a very young child?
Beautiful. Beautiful. We had a lot of fun. We fix our games. We do them. We don't buy them. We go swimming in the river. We learn how to swim there. So it's everyday childhood, like, was amazing. Every day is something different. It depends on your friends, where they're going that day. And we just go. Safe. No one can say nothing to us.
And let's elaborate a little bit more on that childhood, because sometimes the media have been so influential in my way of thinking with Iraq. So you're little.
Yes.
But you can walk the streets. It's nice and free. It's a beautiful city.
Everything. I remember first day in school when I finished. I was 6 years old. When I finish, I'm in the center, so I try to make a bit of money, but I can't tell my mom and dad. I used to sell water. One bucket, put eyes on it, and sell it, like, make money, and go, like, enjoy it, buy games, or buy play cards, and play with my friends.
What did your mom and dad do?
My dad, he was in the army. My mom, she's full-time mom.
How many... Have you got brothers and sisters?
Yes. And that time I had one sister younger than me, 2 years, and I had my brother, he is younger than me, 4 years.
What are their names?
Silvana and Ivan.
And mum and dad, what were they called?
Samir Zakia. Okay. My mum Zakia and my dad Samir.
And dad in the army, what did... And was this during the Iraq-Iran?
Iraq-Iran war.
Yeah. What did your dad do?
He was a cook in the army because he is a chef. He learned that since he was young, 16, 17 as well. So he used that skills to do it in the army. Everyone was loving it in the army. They put him like in the kitchen, everything. Yeah. And he cooked for the generals and everyone in the army.
Mosul, if we kind of dissect Iraq, if we've got Basra at the bottom.
Mosul up north.
Mosul, you're at the top, and then Baghdad in the middle.
Yes.
That's kind of what it is like, isn't it? And so you're near the borders of Turkey, Syria, and Iran on the other side.
That's right.
Was the Iran-Iraq war a big part of your life growing up?
Yeah, but we saw a lot of bomb hitting schools, hitting like areas, but it wasn't that bad like what American did. That is different, yeah. But we used to have a basement, so every time the alarm goes off in the area, and we used to go in the basement to hide, which is, we used to love it when we, because it was colder there. Because it's all like underneath the houses, ancient city, you know. Even the way they built Mosul, beautiful houses. Beautiful, yeah. So it's not new, it's ancient, but the style of it is wicked.
Did with other members of the family in the army?
We used to live in one school, basically, empty. It's not a school. They left it. So one of my dad's cousin, he took that. He rented all, and he gave his cousins 2 rooms. So my mom and dad, they used to have 2 rooms. My other cousin, he lives opposite, like 2 classes. Each one, 2 classes.
So the family were together.
Exactly. And we play inside. Like, if something happened in the road, like if any danger, which just wasn't, we can play inside in the
school.
In the school.
And then with members of that family, part of the army as well?
Few of them, I remember. But few of them.
Tell me about your. We spoke before. You talked about your first childhood memory about your uncle.
my uncle, yeah, my uncle, that's what the first bad memory I had. Like, I was little in that age, in 1993 or 94, I'm not sure exactly. We hear the news. I was in his wedding. He got married and everything, and he need to
83. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, 83. Yeah, yeah. And then he went to have his marriage certificate to go back to army, so they give him a month break because he is a new marriage. So he went. He didn't come back. He was in a FAO fighting. If you remember, FAO was they fight in Iraq and Iran war about that area. FAO. They call it Iran. They took it, and Iraq. They want it back. It's an Iraqi town.
Mm.
Yes, and he didn't come back.
And you can remember what distress around that time?
Yeah, my mom, she was crying. We too close. You know, when something happened, like too close. My mom, I remember she started hitting herself, like slapping her face, crying like hard. Mm. Because before that, she had two brothers in 1982. Got hostage in Iran.
Mm.
The same. Two brothers. So three brothers she got. One got killed. And two brothers, they are in Iran. We don't know nothing about them. Hostage.
Oh, yeah, at the time the army. Third brother was killed?
Yes, yes. So three brothers in that time.
Mm.
So it was mad time.
Was that? Were they your... Yeah, so they were your mother's brothers?
Brothers, that's
yeah.
right.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you see your dad a lot?
Once a month, he used to come from army 6-7 days a month. Every month he spent in army, they give him break for 6-7 days to come back to see us. And he was like, most of the time, I remember I used to get pissed off. I want to spend time with him. He used to spend his time like with the pigeons. He had like pigeons.
Did he?
Yeah. But a different one, like proper expensive one.
Racing
the pigeons. One, huh?
Like racing pigeons.
Yeah. And they used to like, go fly around the area for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, famous in Mosul. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Everyone knows him in Mosul.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you join him? Or was it...
No, I used to hate it because, you know, when something you dad, you don't have time with him and he spend it with the pigeons and you always think like, why you don't spend time with me? So in his 6-7 days, I would see him one day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's always like up or with his friend when he come.
Mm.
He come where like food is ready and everything. Yeah.
Mm.
He eats and he go back. Like, he's got timing. He got time to feed them, to fly them certain time. Yeah.
Mm. People get obsessed with pigeons.
Yes.
They get a real passion for it. Was the family close?
Very close. Yeah. Yeah. Well, my mom, too close to my dad. My grandma, she used to live just down the road, like 5 houses as well. And my aunties, my uncles, like my grandma, my dad's mom.
Mm.
Yeah. They used to live like, always like when I fed up from my house, I would go there.
Mm.
Yeah.
And was the, so like, let's move into almost like the teenage life.
Yes.
So 13, 14. What was it like then? Was it different to here? But was there football games? Was there,
yes,
was it free? Was there freedom?
Yeah, yes. Even after 1990, after the first war, everything is perfect. We had a regime, like we used to struggle with the food and that a little bit. But me, we had fun. I used to see the ghost plane, American plane, when we go, me and dad, we bet me and dad where it's going to hit the missile because they come like, you know, the ghost plane, the triangle one.
Mm.
They used the first one.
The stealth bomber, yeah.
Yes. And without nothing, without nose, and we come see it, and he opened the nose, and boom, like that, and he hit. So we used to see where it's going to hit.
In 1990.
Yeah. Yeah, I was 13 years old.
What was the feeling around about Saddam Hussein? Was it positive?
Saddam Hussein?
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein, he got one thing he didn't like. He's a proper, he don't like anyone disrespect his country. And disrespect him. He don't care. Even his son.
Mm.
He don't care anyone, even his family. He killed his son-in-law.
Mm.
There's
this disrespect. But growing up, you know, going back from being really little to being a teenager,
yeah.
Did you ever feel unsafe with him being in power?
Nothing. I was just living my life. Just don't do nothing against the government. Against him, don't mention him and don't say his name in a bad bad conversation or something you make with your friends, you're safe. No one's going to knock on your door.
Mm. And what was religion a big part of life growing up?
Yes, it is. Like in some areas, like when they see like a little bit like you're Christian, but most of it, like we was fine.
You were Christian.
I'm Christian.
And brought up a Christian.
Yeah, all my family, all of us.
Yeah.
And we speak Aramaic, which is ancient language as well. What Jesus spoke.
Mm.
Yeah, we speak it.
And what other language?
Arabic and Aramaic. Arabic is Arabic, Iraqi language. Yeah. And Aramaic is an ancient language. It's very old, older than Arabic.
Mm. And with Mosul, you know, being an ancient city, was that always the case? Did Muslims mix with Christians all the time?
Yeah. No one asked you Muslim. I used to have a Muslim friend. We used to play together. And it's nothing. It changed after 2003.
Mm.
Nothing wasn't that like bad before.
The one thing I'm fascinated about is like normal life, especially now going into almost like later teenage years.
Because, yes.
You know, you joined the army when you was 18, but before that, and your dad left. What did he do after he left?
After he left, he got the restaurant. I used to work with him.
Yeah.
He got one restaurant in the middle of, in the center, basically, where is the cinemas, strip club, bars.
Strip club.
Yes. Bars, everything. And I used to, my daddy, the restaurant, we didn't have a shutter. 24 hours is open.
Mm.
So we didn't have a shutter. So my dad, he start from 8 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock evening. Me and my uncle, my dad's brother, he's in Sweden right now. We used to cover a night shift for my dad, but I would leave at 12 because I got school to go.
And it was, so what? There was alcohol?
Everything. In the restaurant, we didn't sell alcohol, but our neighbor, like a bar, he used to sell alcohol. We used to see women, like they having fun. They come out of strip club. They buying food from us and they getting drink and they go back until morning, nonstop.
Could women drink alcohol?
Yes.
So, you know, your sisters or your friends, whatever.
Yeah, in a party, a Christian party, we drink. No one can say nothing to us. Yeah. This is a part of our culture. We used to drink, like, each party. I used to get drunk in the parties. I see every Christmas, we do, like, a party, someone like a DJ, and he sells tickets. So we get the tickets, and the whole area, we go there, like, in the Christmas, and we celebrate there.
But everything was open, and you know, like I'm not going to dwell on the strip club thing, but it's such a weird thing for me to think of in places like Mosul and Iraq.
It's beautiful.
But it was just all, there was just, it was free. People were free to trade and to set up business.
Yes, everything. Even like when we used to like, that is how safe was. We used to finish from the party 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. Everyone drunk. We used to walk to our houses from the center to my place, about 45 minutes to walk there. Middle of the night, and no one, and we screaming, shouting. You know how is it everyone when gets drunk, like happy, innit? No one can say us like nothing. Police, they just in the corner. They know Christian. They having party. They having fun. No one can tell us nothing.
Mm. It's just such a strange thing. Can you walk me through the city? Was the city clean? I don't mean to disrespect anyone, but was the drainage, was the bin collection, was there all these things?
It is, but a little bit it gets messy. You know, as an ancient city, we don't have drains and that underneath the road. So we used to see in each area, we got a bit of like a small pavement and it's got like a triangle. So any water will go through there. And you can see it, you walk, but you know, you walk in the side, like you see in every area because it's ancient. They can't build a train in the old ancient city.
Mm. But everything was working.
Everything
well,
working, you know, no problem.
Electricity.
Yeah. I never heard like we didn't have any, I didn't feel like we didn't have electricity in my life. Only after 1990.
Mm.
Start, we have a problem.
Problems so, after the first Gulf War, Why did you join the army?
I had to. When you hit 18 years old, you have to go. If you're not in school, you have to go to army.
And how did that, did you receive a letter?
No, you just like your name, your date of birth, if you hit 18, straight, you go sign up for army and they take you from there. Yes. When you're 18. If you're in school, you go to the same place, you prove you are still in school. So you're not going to army until probably you finish school. If you finish, like you graduated from school and that, you will do 1.5 years in the army as a student.
And then what would you do?
No, 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah, I didn't go. Yeah.
Yeah. So you joined at 18.
18.
And then what was the process? You joined and then you trained?
I joined the army and they took me to be a sergeant, teaching new soldiers to use an AK-47 to like get them fit for the army, which is, it took me 7 months. Mm. The school they teach me and I become a sergeant. And yeah, they took me from there. They sent me to another place where we teach new soldiers in southern Iraq. It's a city called Kut.
Whereabouts is that? Is that really?
Kut is just down south of Baghdad, about 1.5 hour, 1 and 15 okay. minutes.
Yeah. And how many miles was that then from Mosul?
I'm not sure how many miles, but it's about driving. It take you about 6.5 hours.
Okay. So quite a distance away from your family.
Yeah.
And then, so you were there then, you was a soldier training new soldiers.
New soldiers, yes.
Yeah. And how was that?
It was all right. I want to do it. I want to finish it. But you know, when the problems comes to you, like from you do when you think, and I had a problem with one of the general there. He asked me to take money from the soldiers. And I knew that time I will get in a prison if someone like another like high in in general, he will come meet the soldiers and he will speak to the soldiers and he say to them, did anyone take money from you? I will get done for it. Mm. 5 years. So I told the general, no, sir, I'm not going to take it. But if you want, I will bring the whole 33 soldiers and you will speak it. Let them hear it from your mouth and I will collect the money for you.
So it was like a corruption.
Yes, corruption, basically.
So the officer was telling you to collect the money, but from your mouth. So you give me the money.
Yes.
Just so I understand this. And then, if someone else from the regime or the army would have come down and said, what's going on? Yeah, asking the soldier, it would have been pointed at you and you'd have got the prison sentence.
They didn't know.
So then what happened?
And then I told him, no, sir, I'm not going to do it. He was wearing normal clothes, if you know the long thing, dishdash is, after we finished the training and everything. And I was still in my army clothes. And he got angry. He slapped me. He said, well, I told you to do this. You're not doing it. I said, no, sir, it's wrong. I know it's wrong. He slapped me and I slapped him back. And we get like in a fight, me and him. And then I thought, what I have done. I told him, you know what? You didn't respect what I'm wearing. You are in normal clothes and you hit what I'm wearing, army clothes, which is I had to defend myself against him. He is a general. I'm a soldier. I'm nothing, basically. So he get more mad. He said, I know what I'm going to do to you. I'm going to put you in a big situation just to get you in prison. And I knew he's going to do that because he's got people around him. I'm not a general.
Yeah, just an old soldier.
Exactly. So, yeah, I wanted to leave in that time, but I couldn't because if I leave, how am I going to travel from Kut to Mosul, which is every 10 kilometers is a checkpoint towards Mosul. They're going to ask me, where are you going? You are in the army. What, you having a break? Show me the card. Mm. Yeah. So I waited another 3 days to get my card. Like they used to give me every 10 days, 4 days to go back.
Like a leave pass.
Yeah, leave pass. And yeah, I took that, never turned back. I stayed in Mosul.
So in the UK, you'd be called AWOL, so absent without leave.
Yes.
So is that what you were? You was absent without leave.
Yes.
So you just deserted, I suppose.
Yes. I left, like, I got like 4 days break. Mm. And that's it. Finished the 4 days. I have to go back. I didn't go back. So they put me as I run from the army. If they caught me, I'm in dangerous again.
And then did they catch you?
No. I stayed without any ID, which is, it was so hard to move around in the city because they see your age is in the army and your head is shaved. You're in the army. So what's happening? Why are you walking? Why are you not in the army? They're going to come and ask you your ID.
Mm.
Because no one shaved his head. Only the army shaved their hair. So I thought, like, I didn't go out. Going, like, from my house to my grandma, like, it's only, like, in the area. It's not far. So I always, like, I used to look around me scared. I say, I'm not going to do that. So I got information from one of my mates in Baghdad. He say, I will do you one fake ID that you got a problem and you didn't go to army and you can't do anything. I say, that will be wicked. Yes, I want to do that. I say, but what are problems? Because anyone, he can't go to army if missing leg, missing arms, or someone like who's got mental issues, like proper crazy and that. I say, how are you going to do it? He said, no, I'm gonna do something different. Thus, you had two holes or three holes in the heart, which they call the mermaid.
Whatever it is. Yes.
The newborn always they have it.
Yeah.
But some newborn they close, but when they grow they close. But some of the adult they still open.
Yeah.
They got mama, something like
that. Yeah. So you got a hole in the heart.
Exactly. Yeah. So he put it like as my ID. That's I can't. I'm not going to army because I got that.
You got a heart problem.
Which is I wanted to try it. Scary, very scary in the beginning. Holding something in your hand, which is that ID. Minimum 7 years in a prison.
Oh, for just holding it in your hand?
Yes, to just holding it in my hand, and I got my photo on it. Only that. If they caught me with it, and they knew, is it fake? I'm done for 7 years.
Mm.
So I thought I'd try it. I like put it in my pocket, and I went. And that time it's a bit hard to find... this is funny. It's a bit hard to find any from like clothes from different country, like jeans. We're not allowed to buy dollars. You can't speak about dollars. 1996, 97.
You can't speak about
No. We're not allowed because what happened in 1990 in a regime, Iraq, America regime, they put regime on it. So we can't speak about it. Even cigarette. They used to smuggle cigarettes to the country.
Mm.
They used to smuggle jeans from Jordan, from Turkey. So what I did, I need to make some money to survive. So I used to take cigarettes from, because they come from Kurdistan, take cigarettes, put them in a suitcase, take them to Baghdad, make a little bit money of it, and I exchange them. I buy some jeans. They come from old Jordan to get them to Mosul, which is, if they caught me with it, I will get 6 months. For that, in that time, we're not allowed to deal with it because it's it's not Iraqi product.
Mm.
Yeah, so I used to do that, and I used to hold the ID, and I've been stopped too many times after that.
What several IDs you used to?
No,
just one.
That is the one that he done. They used to say your ID, and sometimes they make a joke. Oh, you got two legs and you got two arms. What's wrong with you? Why you didn't go, mate? They try to be funny, you know, with me. I say, I got a hole in the heart, innit? Yeah. Oh, okay. They give it back. But one time, there was too close in Habibiyah in Baghdad. I remember one of my cousins, he used to live in Habibiyah, one area called in Baghdad. And I was there, and I had my shop in Mosul, barber shop. So always I make story to back me up with my ID. I have to think about it. It's not just easy not thinking about what is your next move. Mm. No, I have to think what is my next move is, how to back it up. So I was in a taxi basically in Baghdad to bring some jeans and that, but there was a home and that, and I used to work by, always I take a scissors with me in my jacket.
Ah, right, okay.
So I had the scissors and checkpoints, special group, they go a coach, they keep on bringing, taking people, putting in a coach, escaping from army, they got problems. And he comes to me, I was in a taxi. And he say to the taxi driver, your ID? He give him the ID, he say, your ID? I say, that's my ID. He laughed. He say, come out, mate, come out. Yeah, I come out. He say, he looked in my ID, he turned it around. He said, where did you buy it? From Sugumredi. There is one area they sell in dodgy stuff, like in Baghdad. I said, what do you mean, sir? He said, where did you get it from? That's fake. I can't tell that. That is a fake. Where did you get it from? How much you pay for it? I said, no, that's Saddam Hussein. He gave me. I got like a problem in my heart. I got a hole in my heart. That's why I get it. He said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Mosul. He said, I can't tell by your accent. What are you doing here? Because that area, Habibiya, is close to the dodgy area.
Mm.
So I say, I'm a barber. I just come to sharpen my scissors. He can't see it from accent of my language. Just like in London from Liverpool.
Mm.
You will recognize him by accent, innit?
Mm.
And he said to me, oh, you're from Mosul. You're a barber. So he took my scissors. He looked at my ID and he want to cut it. He said, if I cut it, what are you going to do? I said, sir, whatever you want to do. If you want me, I come with you to the coach, you take me. I don't mind. Yeah, like I have to show it.
He
like,
called his bluff. Yeah,
exactly. But what is it? I have to put chewing gum in my because I got stress. So when you chewing gum, because you know the army and like anyone, when you put a chewing gum, the face will change. Like when you speak, like you will chewing and they don't see you. You're scared.
Mm, more relaxed.
More relaxed. And they don't read your face, you're scared or not.
Mm.
Don't look in their eyes, put a chewing gum and speak to him. So I did that. He said, I will cut it. I said, say whatever you want to do. He looked at me like I'm relaxed. And so he said, yeah, go.
Off you go.
Wake up. Went in the taxi driver. And I can't speak to the taxi driver. He said, why are they making it? The taxi driver. He said, why are they making it hard for everyone? I said, I don't know. I'm not from here, but that's what happened in Baghdad. I tried to play stupid, didn't it? Yeah, he said, yeah, they're always around the areas, always like you never know where the checkpoints.
So there was a lot more harassment, was the after 1990?
After 1990. Yeah. Because a lot of soldiers, they escaped from the army after that.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And your barbershop, so you were a barber in Mosul.
Yes, in Mosul, just in my area called Ta'a.
And... Yeah. Because things had changed, and you was talking about all these checks. Were you getting checked all the time?
Yeah.
Was the shop getting checked? Were you getting checked?
Yeah. How was it working? They come. Basically, when they come, you never know where they come. They travel 3-4 pickup truck, and Fidayu Saddam, one special group of the army, you know, they come stop in the area checking all the shops. They're going quick. Each four of them in one shop, and ask your ID. They try to do that. They ask an ID to capture it, like the one they escaped from the army. They just check in details.
Mm.
And you never know what time they're going to come, in the morning, evening.
But this was fear then, wasn't it? The people were, there was a fear element to this as well.
Yes, yes.
And you eventually got caught with this ID.
I got caught in my shop. They come one day because they usually come. I give the same ID and everything. Nothing happened. But one of my mate, he had. I was the middleman to do his fake ID as well. He been caught, but I didn't know they caught him.
Mm.
Just before me, 2 months ago. So I didn't know where is he. He is a different area. And that. So basically he said to them, like, who done this? Who did this ID for you? He told him, Sivan the barber. I didn't know about that until they caught me. After 1 month, I clicked it.
Mm.
And then they come to the shop. They ask everyone ID. They didn't come straight to me. I give my ID. They ask the boys, your ID. They give their IDs. And they come. They left me last one. When I give them my ID, he say, you, Sivan? I say, yeah. He put it in his pocket straight. And he took my belt and he handcuffed me. My arms behind my back. And from there, start beating me to the pickup truck. He said, we knew about you.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, he was watching me, the one 4 years younger than me. He was in the area. He started screaming.
He was 19.
Yeah, he was like around 14, 15, 15 time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they took me to their base. I never had beaten in my life. I thought like, oh my God, they're going to slap me. They're going to do. You know, your imagination when you haven't been beaten and just start building up straight. They put me, They put me in the floor, and there is a 1 meter square, and you can't escape from it. It's like a basement, but 1 meter by 2 meter. So when they hit you with the cable,
like a pit,
exactly. You can't go no left, no right, and there are two of them in the top of you.
Mm.
So where are you gonna go? Nowhere. So they start hitting me. How many IDs did you do? I say, I didn't do no IDs. And that. He said, no, we know Arkan. His name Arkan, the guy. We know Arkan. We knew about him. I said, who is Arkan? I try to ignore it. I can't say it. And after they hang me in the window with one handcuffs, start hitting me. Yeah.
Explain that. What do you mean by the hanging you? With your hands?
With one hand. They put one handcuff on my hand, and the other hand, they hang without touching, my feet touching the floor. Oh, so I was hanged. If you see it, my hand here, that is open from the handcuff.
Yeah, that's quite
a... Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of problem is prisoners, they have problem, what they call, you know, any metal goes to your skin and you got gangery, they call it.
Gangery?
Yeah.
Yeah, like an infection.
They cut yeah. Two of my mates, they cut their hand just because of that. Because it went gangrene,
yes. Infection. Yeah.
And because of transporting prisoner from Mosul to Baghdad in the train, 8, 9, 10 hours, your hands underneath your back, and three prisoners sitting in two seats, and shoulder by shoulders, hand cuffed, and leg by leg, and 10 hours underneath, and they don't have handcuffs. They got a chain and a lock. So the chain goes in deep in your skin, and after 10 hours, it goes, you can see it bleeding, and your hands are swollen like four times of your hand size, innit? Because it cut the blood on it, innit? It will swallow.
So you were hung up in a window?
In the window.
With one hand just hanging. Hanging. And I can see your scar, that's pretty horrendous.
Yes.
And then what were they doing?
And they hit you with the cables. Electric cables, they just hit you, and I got the other scar here. That's when the metal comes out from the cable.
Yeah.
And they hit me here, and they opened my arm around that area.
Yeah. And then how long did that last?
About 1 hour. They saw, and after that, they have to go to the second one, innit? Mm. A lot of prisoners, they captured a lot. They put me in a prison. I stayed there after 4 days, and they transferred me to another place. And again, even if they got my file and I said everything, they not taken your file. Oh, you done that? That's it. Transfer him to other place. No, investigation again, beaten again, and everything. And the second time, they want to know more, and they put my arm. You know when you park your bicycle in the road here, they got the two metal bar.
Yeah,
exactly. We got the same building, the concrete, but about 50 centimeters between each metal.
Yeah,
it's got a gap. So they put your arm here and they smash it with another metal bar in your arm. They break your arms.
And they broke your arms?
They broke both of them.
Mm.
They broke both of them, but I didn't feel nothing. I collapsed, but after that, I wake up because.
Is this because essentially you were facilitating? Because you were the middleman and you had an ID. So you were a middleman facilitating other people to avoid the army. And this is why they came down. How was they trying to get information out of you?
They didn't believe I was the middleman.
Right.
They believe in I used to do them.
Mm.
They didn't believe I was the middleman.
So they were trying to get more information.
How many you did, how many, I said it all. I said it all. I done just two guys, Arkan and Anamar.
And how long were you in prison for?
In prison, it took to transfer me because, you know, when you escape from the army, basically, when you've been captured, they have to send you where you used to serve in the army.
Oh, okay.
So I used to serve in Kut, and from Mosul to Kut, it took them about 1.5 months to transfer me to there because every 4 or 5 days, I'm somewhere.
Mm.
Until I went Baghdad. I went like different places in Baghdad again.
So they were moving you around all the time, so you never settled.
Exactly, investigation and everything.
Yeah.
Until I arrived in my way. I used to serve in the army. It took 1.5 months. About 1.5 months, my tooth was gone, like broke from the punches, and I got a scar on my head, if you see it.
Mm.
That's from the boots he hit me. And I got hair in my shoulders as well, scar. Yes. Basically, no taking shower for 1.5 months. Mm. All blood all around you, just fixing, changing twice when they break my arms and they fix them, changing twice and they put
the cast.
They put them, and after 1.5 months, when I arrived there, it was like healed a little bit. Mm. They opened it, they change it like once a week. They used to change it, and they saw me in the army. I used to serve there. Everyone knows me. Like only the general, he took his shoes when he saw me, and he threw it on my face from far. Why did you do this? And after that, he slapped me once, and I went to the prison. And the prison, because our prison in the army there, it was, we used to give the soldiers the guns from the same place.
Oh, really? Like the armory?
So it's very secure. I have to be there.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
Yes. Yeah. So I used to give my soldiers the AKs. Like I used to open the room, give them the AKs to train them and bring them back. So the manager of that, the general of that place, he knows me. He's from southern Iraq, Nasiriyah. When he saw me, he said, "Oh my God, what happened to you, man? Why did you? We heard about you. We heard about you. You did this, and you're gonna go for a long, if not death sentence." I said, "Listen, it happens, innit?" And he looked after me. I went to prison. He said, "Just like we was in, exactly in 6 meter by 4 room, about 29 of us.
Oh my!
In the floor. So each one you will measure it with your hands, about 40 centimeters. You put your hand and you put your blanket and you sleep. So we was one opposite the other ones here, and if we got a gap in the middle, they will sleep there. So we was 29 in one." And the guy, the general, he say, "Listen, these ones, like only they got prison like 3 months, 4 months, they escaped from the same place. They will stay there. They not have heavy sentence. They will stay there."
Until because they just escaped, whereas you'd escaped with an ID.
Exactly.
And then they were putting on the other stuff with you as well.
Exactly. So what they going to do with me, I going to stay in my army base where I used to say to serve in prison. There until my court coming. They're waiting for my court, and then when my court finish, because I gonna have death sentence or life sentence, they're not gonna keep me there. They're gonna transfer me to bigger security prison, which was Abu Ghraib, if you know about it, in Baghdad.
Of course, yeah.
They put me there, but I need to wait for the court in my army. So
let's go to the court then. So what happened? Nine months
in the prison,
and then you got to the court and the verdict. What was the verdict?
And the court, like while I was staying in prison, which is that is interesting. You know, everyone telling you, you're done, innit? Like your life is gone, death sentence, or if you're lucky, life. So you try to think. Your brain is focusing in one thing. You're not focusing about the bills. You're not focusing about anything around you, not about your family. And you know no one can do anything of your family to help you with. That is an army thing. So 9 months sitting down, planning my escape, the only day I'm going to see the sun is when they transfer me from Kut to Baghdad to my court when I get my sentence. And that day, I have to do it. If I don't do it, I'm done. So 9 months in prison, put in plans, plan A, B, C. Each plan is long. Each plan, I have to think in every move, and I put the positive and negative of that plan. If the negative is too much percentage of my positive, I'm not going to do it. Or I back up some another plans to my negative one to back it up. So I done 3 plans. In that time, I used to draw in the prison and write poetry, which is one of my plans. Send them back to my mom after 6 months when I finish them. I say, "This is mom, keep them safe." When they used to visit me every Friday, "Keep them safe. This is like $1 million to you." She said, "What are you talking about?" I say, "Just keep them." She say, "What? I can see you draw some pictures and poetry, like writing poetry in Arabic and that." I say, "Just keep them." And she said, "What is the signature about?" I said, "Mom, just keep them. I don't want to tell you the whole story." And my mom, she kept them. My dad, he got pissed off because she took them home every time she opened them, and she cries.
Is this when you were in prison?
Prison, yes. Yeah.
So this is building up. You were passing her poetry and
yes, yeah. Just giving her that book, just save them at home with you. So I went to my court. My plan was plan A. Go into the court. The guard, he will come to me with me. He will take me to the court. He will go a bullet ready in the chamber. If I'm 3 meters far from him, he will shoot me. We understand that in the army. I'm handcuffed. And he is my mate. He is a sergeant and he knows me.
Mm.
The same, because it's a short time I escaped. So he say, listen, this is army. I have to take you. And I say, no problem. So I went to the court. I went to the court and I waited for my name to be shown in the area to enter the court. And they said my name. My dad and my uncle they come because they knew it's at my court day, and they come just like they're watching what's going to happen, just with other families of other prisoners. I went to the court and I got solicitor as well, a lawyer.
Just come a little bit closer.
Yeah. And I got lawyer. And this first sentence was death sentence, shooting. They shot me.
For you?
For me, because I was in the army. I'm not... a normal person, they will hang me. If you done something like bad in a lifetime, you're not in the army, they will hang you. But if you are in the army, they will shoot you. And they break in that after they take me out from the court. And there is one guard in the court. He will say out loud what I had sentence in the court. He come in the door. He said,
"Oh, so you're not in there." Are you in the courtroom?
I'm in the courtroom, yeah. And you come out, whereas everyone is out waiting for the court, and he will say everyone's sentence what he had out loud to everyone. So I came out, my dad and my uncle, they was in the hall, like they sitting, and he shouted like my name. He got their sentence. My uncle straight collapsed, my dad, and we went to him and the guard. We throw some water in his face. He couldn't take it. I was ready for it because that's what I heard all the nine months. Yeah. He wake up. I said, maybe they're going to call me. They will call me because I got a lawyer and I got like evidence of my uncles. 4 uncles get killed in the war.
Mm.
So at least they're going to respect that. So they called me back. They dropped my death sentence to life sentence.
Because of your family history with
because
the army.
Of my family history.
Did you feel that you'd let people down? Did you feel like you'd let your father and your uncle down?
They couldn't blame me because what has been happening with them in the whole life. My dad, he served about 10 years. My uncle, 16 years.
No, I'm not talking about the court. I'm talking about your family. Had you felt like you'd let your family down?
A little bit, yeah. I was feeling sorry about them, what they're going to... But I knew it was going to end. I'm dead, innit? I know it's going to end. They're not going to suffer. Even if they transfer, even if I didn't escape from that, my plans, 3 plans I made, they will transfer me to Abu Ghraib. I will commit suicide in the prison to kill myself. I'm not going to let my family visit me.
That was the mindset. If you was going to do life, then you was going to end it.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not going to do life in prison for what? I'm not coming out.
Mm. And then what happened then? So your uncle broke down and you were given a more lenient sentence, life in prison.
Yeah.
What happened next?
And I got the sentence. Basically, it's a life sentence. And we come out and they give him a paper for like what I got in sentence. And the guard, he took the paper and we went out. I say, listen, mate, like my mom only, like she is in Mosul and it's only four and a half hour drive. And this paper, you can't go back to the army for 3 days. After 3 days, they will look for you and me. So let's just go, just because she is ill. Let's go to Mosul just to see my mom, just to say goodbye to her and everything, and we can come back to our army.
Oh, so you had from the court, you had 3 days with the soldier.
We didn't go 3 days. I tried to make conversation with him to accept it to come with me because he's not allowed.
Hmm.
He's allowed, but it depends the situation. And I told him, I'm your friend. Just take me to see my mom in Mosul and we come back to Kut. we're in prison, and that's it, it's done. Yeah. He said, no, I can't. I said, listen, mate, I was in the army, and I took two soldiers with me. They was from Kirkuk, another place, another city. They were sentenced 6 months and 8 months, and I took them with me. I went to their family in Baghdad. They visit their family, and I done everything because I got a gun. And I told them I'm handcuffed, and you know you are my friend, and you got permission to shoot me if I'm 3 meters far from you. So I tried to speak to him like nicely, and that he said, you know what, let's go. And my dad, he didn't know nothing about my plan. No, my dad, no one. I didn't say it to no one. And we got the taxi from the garage in Baghdad. We told the guy, go Mosul. My plan A was perfect plan. Why? If I escaped in Baghdad, another plan, I couldn't move from Baghdad to Mosul. How am I going to move? Shaved hair.
Mm.
No paper, nothing. So I used the guard as he's coming with me, see my mom. If they checkpoints, they say, okay, I'm prisoner, but he's visiting his mom, and I'm going to take him back. They can't say nothing to him.
Mm.
So we went to checkpoints. Yeah, where is your ID? They asked me, where is your ID? Shaved hair, white, proper, like light skin. I haven't seen the sun. They knew he's a prisoner.
Mm.
Yeah, he told them he is a prisoner, and I'm going to take him. His mom, she is ill, and he's just going to see his mom, and going to take him back to Kuwait.
Were you handcuffed at this point?
Yeah, handcuffed in the car. Yeah. And we went back home. My mom, she was in the church in that time. She wasn't at home. And she come back, opened the door. He was in there. Plan after plan. What I did, everything perfect. I got my twin sister. They was born in 1989, just before the American-Iraq War. They was like 7, 8 years old in that time.
Yeah, Your twin sisters?
Twin sisters, yeah. And basically everything comes to him. I planned everything, but when is him, I didn't let him think about it, nothing. Everything comes to him quickly. He didn't click it. And I was sitting in flat in that time. We moved to another flat back in the days. And I lock the door and I give him the key. I say, just to open my handcuffs, like my mother, she will lock the door and she will give you a key so you will be safe. You are with my family and everything. He felt safe and he took the key. He didn't click it like family. Each one has got a key. My brother has got a key. My mom has got a key. My dad has got a key. So we stayed. We have like, mom, oh, she said, what happened? Did you get your sentence? I said, mom, don't worry. I got my sentence. I got life sentence, but they're going to try to make my mom not scared. They, my dad, he finds someone, he's going to drop it to 5 years maybe. Try to make her happy. Not like, she said, oh, I wish, where's going to happen that? And we start talking with my family. I speak Aramaic. He didn't understand. He understand only Arabic. And I sat down with my mom. He sat down. He said, we need to go sleep. So I had room. They left for me and him. Two beds, single beds, and he sleep there and I sleep there, and with a locked door and everything, and he will get the keys, but he opened my handcuffs and he's got the AK. But I told him, mate, sorry to say that I got my sister, they very naughty, just take your AK, I got wardrobe, I will put it in the wardrobe, please, because they always like naughty, they try play with different stuff when they find something new. Yeah, he said, yeah, no problem. I'm planning to take the needle from the AK, you know. So when
the firing
I escaped,
pin.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when I escaped, if he got mad, he's not going to shoot my mom or my dad. I have to make sure about them. So he was asleep. We slept. Before we slept, my mother in that time, she said, please watch this movie with me. What movie was? Titanic. I sat down watching a movie with her, Titanic. She was crying in the end. And I say, it's a good movie. It's good. Like, you can't change it. Like, you have to be that way. She started crying. She started hugging me. I said, come on, let's go sleep. We went to sleep. She went to sleep in her room. I went back. Wake up around 4 o'clock in the morning just to check him if he is awake or not. just to try to see how he's heavy sleeping or not. I make noise, everything. He didn't wake up. I get up. I say, give me the key. I need to go to the toilet. The room key. Mm. Yeah. He said, yeah, yeah. And I went to the toilet, tried to make him comfortable as much as I can. So I went. He was asleep in the way back. I wake him up. I say, here is the key. I lock the door. And again, at 5 o'clock, I wake him up. I say, can you give me the key again? I think I had diarrhea. I don't know what did I. So he gave me the key. I went back and I went. The wardrobe is just next to me. Open it, just pull the AK and go out in the toilet quick. Open it, take the needle, put it back in the wardrobe.
Mm.
That's safe. Took the needle, throw it. We got a small window from the toilet, just throw the needle out from there. And I went back and slept. We wake up around 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the morning. We wake up and my mom knocking the door. Come on, breakfast, come on. So we sit down in the breakfast in other room, and he sit down, wash his face, and I wash my face, and we sit down. I was planning to help my mom just to see me. I'm moving around and I'm coming back to the same room in the house just to give him that he is comfortable. I'm
reassuring him.
Ensuring everything around him.
Yeah.
I went to my mom. I pick up the tea and I put in his table in front of him, and we put one channel. We used to have one sport channels in Iraq. Is it Syrian channel? But we can have it because we live in a Mosul, so we can have some Syrian channels. Mm. They put like some women's, they doing sport and that. And he was from the south. Like they didn't have that channels, so he was eating the TV. Yeah. So I told, yes, that is the tea, that is the bread. I tried to help my mom from kitchen to the room. And I told my sister, I say, Silvana, open the door for me and put my trainers in the door. Shocked. She said, in my language. She said, what are you doing? Because I didn't say nothing. If I said it, they're going to react differently. I can't say it. I said, just open my trainers, open the door for me. She said, the main door. I say, yes. She opened the door. And then I can't remember what I bring the last bit from the kitchen, put in the table. And I say, I went back to the kitchen, and the kitchen is just like 2 meters from the main door. And me just put my yashmak, you see what Arab they wearing, because I have to cover myself.
Mm-hmm.
If someone see me, like proper light skin.
You covered your head and
exactly.
Face.
Put my trainers and run. Escape from the house. But before I escaped, I throw an envelope, which is definitely my dad is going to read it, or him, and underneath the door, which is I made it ready in the prison. It was in my pocket, one of my plan. That is, I wrote on it like, that is, you're not my family. I'm over 18. I was, you didn't help me. I start swearing, and my dad start swearing everyone of my family, my uncle, you know, my uncle, my signature underneath it, and the day. And I fraud it.
To make them understand that it wasn't your family assisting you.
Yes.
So it was all by yourself.
Because what is it? If I escaped, what are they going to do?
Yeah, your family would.
They would take my dad. So I have to give up myself.
Oh, right. Okay.
So he had to have some proof of it to get out if they caught him. So I was in a run. I went escape, like running between the area. Mosul, an ancient city. Some of the roads, not even car can get in.
Mm.
It's too wide, like closed places, like not even car can get in. Only humans, they can. So I used this area to go like about 25 minutes running to go to my friend's house. Even him, he didn't know about me. Nothing. Everything like bang, bang, new. So I went to him. I stayed in his basement. Stayed just because they're going to call my dad. Or my dad is going to send someone. Or I send my mate to my grandma, not sending him to my house, just to see what's going on, what's happening, because I didn't know nothing. So I send my friend's name, Janan. I say, Janan, please, after 3 days, just go to my grandma. Just ask, because that situation is too hot now. Like, my family, they've been washed now from every angle. of the area. So just go to my grandma, just see the situation. Where is my dad or my family are safe? And what happened? He went, he met my uncle. He say, he threw an envelope and he opened it. His dad, he read the envelope. He's got a message. He read in front of the guard. And the guard, he say, he went out, pull his gun. He start shooting in the road. He want to throw a couple of bullets. So all the army around the area, they will come. To see what's happening, or the police, they come, why is someone shooting? So it's more quicker than call the army. Oh, someone,
Yeah, exactly.
So they come. He wanted to nothing. His gun wasn't working. Nothing. And he says, Sivan's dad, he's in. But he was out after 2 days. And Janani told my uncle, why? How did they let him? He says, Sivan, he froze one letter for him to say, you know, my dad and everything. And what they did, they took his dad, Samir. They took them to one area. And they saying, okay, we're going to take you instead of your son. So your son, he will give up and give himself up to the army. Yeah. And after that, he said, no, you know, my dad, he said, look, this is the message. I had it in front of the guard, blah, blah, blah. He told him the story. He's not my son. I know he's my son, but he's over 18. He done something against the government. I don't want him. I don't want him anymore. And they opened the message and they read it. And after that, that was the first day. The second day, they ask him question. They go to my dad. He was in prison, my dad, like, detained. They ask him, is he had any books from school when he used to study, his handwriting? My dad, he say, no. He left school a long time. And after that, he remembered, I got these books in the prison poetry and what I give to my mom. So he mentioned these books. So they send the guard to my house to bring these books. They bring these books. They match in the handwriting and my signature from the books. My dad's out.
It's one hell of a plan.
Yes, yeah, it is.
And then from there, you went to Kurdistan.
I went here. From there, I went to first checkpoints. I was like in a small car. Someone, you know, the first checkpoint, someone like he knows who's there. Like we give him some money. So he saw us like nothing, no ID, nothing. Just go small cars, normal cars. It was Toyota. But the other checkpoints, especially before the last checkpoints between the government and the Kurdistan, they call it FIDA. That is all like special group and everything. I was middle of empty tank, oil tank, inside the oil tank, but empty.
Like a truck?
Yeah.
An oil tanker?
Yeah.
You were inside?
I was inside.
That's it.
Yeah. But smell, oh, I was dizzy when I came.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. I had like a mask and everything, but it didn't help. But it's not long distance. It's only half an hour. Just cross over. The checkpoint is dangerous. That's it. That's Kurdistan. You can't walk. That's it. No one can say nothing to you.
Because you were dead anyway. You were dead in Iraq.
Yes.
Yeah, so you stayed there in Iraq. So it was worth the risk in that tanker.
Yes, I'm dead. Like, even if they caught me, I didn't worry about nothing because I'm already dead.
Can we fast forward then? So that was 97.
Yeah.
You managed to get to Greece and spent 3 years in Greece. Yes. And you was struggling to live and all the rest of it. Yeah. Then you got to the UK. In 2002.
2002, yes.
And then I want to fast forward us again. You got into 2002. In fact, first of all, were you welcomed in 2002? I'm assuming you was a refugee.
I was as an asylum seeker, but when they heard my story in the home office, as an army, and that time was like, war is going on.
Yeah.
In 2003,
was 2002. Was you an asylum seeker or was you a refugee? Or is there a difference?
I was an asylum seeker. After that, they put me as a war refugee because I had the problems there. And they hear my story and they give me remain.
Yeah, but I mean, you would have been killed if you'd have gone back. So 2003, what was life like in the UK during that period? Because the UK was essentially at war with... I was there.
Yes.
I was a British soldier. I crossed from Kuwait into Iraq.
Yes.
Essentially, I was at war with Iraq.
Yes.
The British government was at war with Iraq.
Yes.
What was the feeling like in the UK with regards to yourself? Or were you just associating yourself with other Iraqis, other refugees?
No,
or did you?
I didn't. Since I come here, because you know when you're on a run, and you know you, you know, with me, I'm different because I left Iraq young age. Like I was on a run. I was 20, 21. Mm. So I lived in Greece. I lived in Turkey. I saw a life beautiful, innit? It's different from Iraq. So my mentality, I'm a bit, I call myself a bit of European.
Mm.
I changed because I was young. I didn't live like about 40 years in Iraq. Mm. I was young. I didn't understand nothing of the life. I was in prison and I was in Iran. So I updated myself. I couldn't read English, nothing. I went to school for 4 or 5 months here. It was too hard for me, but I thought, no, I will sit down. I will get a computer. I will taught myself by myself, watching documentary, watching, reading a newspaper and everything. I knew only the ABCD, the basic from Iraq. But yeah, I taught myself, updated myself basically. I tried to fade in with, and that's how I felt like, because I felt there is more happiness, is more like freedom. You know what I mean? And plus, like, I looked back on my family life, even when we was happy in Iraq, but I looked back, I tried to understand more things. I say, why it happens? Why my uncle got killed? For what? Four of them. Mm-hmm. Why my daddy spent 10 years in the army? Why my uncle did that? So I tried to hate that life, which is I didn't hate before when I was there, because I didn't know another life existed, like in UK. Freedom, good. You can move around. You can go holiday. We didn't go holiday in Iraq, only from city to city. So I tried to compare it. I said, it's not worth it, like what happened in Iraq. And you know what? If they take Saddam, I will be happy.
Mm. So your view then for being a child to be in your early 20s had changed?
Changed, yeah.
I mean, Mosul took a real, what's the word? I mean, it was heavily impacted by the war from 2003 onwards. Yes. Can we talk a little bit about your mum in 2004?
I was here. I used to live just on West Ealing with one of my girlfriend, flats, 7th floor. And I heard, and Sunday was, I remember it. I had a day off because I used to work 6 days a week just to help my family. And I had call from a nun from the church. My family, they couldn't call me, not even my uncle. No one of them, they couldn't tell me my mom gone.
Mm.
They couldn't give me that message. And I was by myself here, they knew. And one nun of the church, we knew her, she teach us, like, we know her. And she called me, she says, Sivan, how are you? You okay? I felt, you know what? Something happened. I haven't spoke with her since I left Iraq. I was shaken. I say, yes, I'm all right. What's happening? Like, you good? How is family? My sister, they come to the church every week, every Friday and Sunday. She say, yeah, your sister, all fine. She asked me, are you by yourself? I say, no, I'm with my mate. I can't say a girlfriend. Mm. It's a bit like disrespect. Like, we don't do that in Iraq. And I said, well, I'm with my mate. She say, okay, is your mate with you? I say, yeah, it's with me. I say, what's the problem? She said to me, I need to tell you something. Your mom, she is a little bit ill. That's what she said in the beginning. I said, what's happening? What's wrong with her? I spoke with her. It was like just 3 days ago on Easter. I just spoke to her on Sunday. I just spoke to her on Sunday. She was nothing, like she was all right and everything. She said, yeah, she get ill and she is in the hospital and don't worry. I said, no. I couldn't believe it. I said, why my family, they didn't tell me then? Why my daddy didn't inform me? I couldn't believe it. I said, who is with you? She said, your dad, your sister, everyone. Yeah? And my sister, she broke and cried. She couldn't say nothing. And I knew something happened to my mom. And my daddy said, he couldn't as well in the beginning. He said, your mom, she went to grab some vegetables for our neighbor because she was pregnant, and she went to the road and a big missile happened, like hit the road, and a lot of shops, women's, there was like just shopping for making a lunch. They've been, my new mom, she'd been hit in her backside, just behind her shoulder. And she just died. We wasn't, that's the second day they called me. They said, when this happened? I couldn't take the news. I wasn't in seventh floor. I had picture of my family. I hit with the glass in my face. Mm. And I want to throw myself from the seventh floor.
Mm.
My girlfriend, she grabbed me, and I didn't know what to do. My mom, she was like, I was too close with my mom. You're not going to believe it. I all my life, I didn't say no to her. Or saying, okay, everyone now is saying stupid sometimes to his mom. That is normal. No way I could say that to my mom. She got big respect for me, and I got massive respect for her. So we was like in good connection, me and her, like always, always. And when I heard that, I lost everything. I was hoping to have a life, mm-hmm. Get married here, beginning of the, just 2004, and Wednesday, she got shot, 12 afternoon.
Mm.
Wednesday was 14, 4.
Do you ever, my mum died 18 months ago, but she died in a hospital of an illness. But I wasn't there. And I wonder what she was thinking about when, you know, the last few minutes. She had my sisters and one of my brothers with her. But do you ever think about those last few minutes with your mum, as in the last few minutes she had?
Yeah. I will give up my life now just to meet her 5 minutes.
Mm.
Do you believe that? I will do it just to hug her one more time. Because when I left Kurdistan, she gave me the last hug. When I left her, she came to Kurdistan, and she knows that I'm in dangerous when I escape.
Mm.
And I'm going to cross the border without any paper, anything, walking from country to country. And she gave me a hug. And yeah, that is the last time I saw her. I looked back in the taxi, and she was standing. That is the last time I saw my mom. Yeah, it was like the most, like till now, every Wednesday, I don't work, even at work.
Mm.
Every year, I go to any church, bring and take any flower, even her grave. I don't know, you know, ISIS, when they go to Mosul, in a Christian grave, they took all the dead people from the grave, and they made them like a storage for their weapons and everything.
Really?
Mosul, yes. What place they call? I forgot the name of the cemetery for Christian, because you have to buy it. And my uncle, he bought one, the place for
like
our
plot.
Family, exactly,
yeah.
To put anyone who will die. So his missus, she died of cancer in Iraq. He put her here. And after that, my mom, they put her there. But she don't have no grave now. And I wish I can go and sit down and knee in her grave, and I cry. Still, I did cry, but I want to take it all out just to feel like good. You know what I mean?
Mm.
To take it all out of your chest, like, you know, your mom, she is there, even her grave.
Mm.
You will go and cry. I didn't have that. I didn't have a chance to cry in her grave even. And
to say goodbye
to her.
Yeah,
I don't. They demolish everything. All their Christian graves.
The a lot of your family, and you've been very supportive in getting a lot of your family out of Iraq into places like France and Australia, and that's a whole different story. That's, you know, several people's stories about how they got there. And a lot of your family, or the majority of your family, are safe and well and thriving in different countries. When you look back at Mosul now, and you see, you know, a film came out, I think it was this year on Netflix or last year, about Mosul, and when you see it and you hear about it, what does it make you feel like now?
I feel sorry about that city. The first thing, how it was, because my memory, all before 2003, I didn't see it after that. I didn't see my city, which was destroyed after 2003, especially after ISIS, then Al-Qaeda. They destroyed a lot of places. So I had the picture of my area still was everything. We didn't have no one building demolished. All was beautiful in my time when I left. I felt a bit emotional when I watched Mosul 4 or 5 months ago on Netflix. There is a movie, short movie. They done it. I was emotional about it. Even when I comment small comment was in Netflix and Facebook. And one of the main actor, the old man, Suhail, his name, he liked my comment. And because I put like, we all have different stories about that city, which is, I feel sorry because it was a beautiful city. But after I see it, like, it was emotional for me, destroyed. I can't remember no area. I can't remember no. But for one thing, I don't know, is it a coincidence or anything? I used to have a shop, barber shop, in Mosul. And you know, when you looked in the army, when they say to you, direction 10 o'clock, it was the church with the clock tower. The only church with the clock tower in the whole Iraq. We got that church. It's a Latinian church. France, they give it to Iraq long time ago, to the church. And my shop here in Ealing, 10 o'clock, a tower's got a clock, tower clock, and is a church, and facing exactly my shop and the tower.
Nice. So you still feel connected?
Yeah, I don't know how, it's not, I don't know, is it a coincidence? From the whole UK, I got a shop, and I'm working as a barber, and I got my shop, exactly the same view, but a little bit different design of the clock and that, and the same in my area, Sa'a. That's why they call it Sa'a, clock.
Do you, you said you feel European. Do you feel British? Do you feel...
I feel British, yeah. I'm mixed. Like when I'm with Iraqis, you have to be Iraqi. You know, there is a way to communication and that. And you try to like to mix it. Like, when with Iraqis, sometimes when they speak and you have to get their own way. If you go the other way, they think, oh, you don't understand them, or you're not in a conversation with them. So you have to act like them. You know what I mean? But after that, when I don't see Iraq, I have to like give my other, not personality, but what I have learned from UK.
To
deliver the message, to deliver something like, I learned a lot here. I learned a lot, like a lot. I educate myself a lot by myself. Yes.
Do you think you'll ever go back?
In Iraq, to live there?
Not to live there, just to go visit.
To go visit, I was only think if I could, to go to Mosul just to visit my mom, the area where she was, like, she passed away in that explosion, and where she's buried. It's just the area. I don't know which grave is it, because it's all demolished. At least, like, I'll be there. Just I want to be there. Just I want to see it. I want to see where the missile hit. Where is it? Is it next to my house? It's only, like, 20 meters far. Just I want to see it. Just I don't know. It stays with me. Just I want to see like where she was.
Sivan, thank you so much, and we will leave it there.
Thank you.